It's 7:43. I'm Teresa Wills. On this West Virginia Morning, we hear from coronavirus czar, Dr. Clay Marsh.
So I think as we go forward, healthcare will change because of the stress. So to save money and improve outcome, let's help people be healthier. I think that's going to be the natural direction that things will go.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. West Virginians following the state's coronavirus response have heard a lot from Dr. Clay Marsh. Marsh is with West Virginia University's Department of Health Sciences and was appointed as Governor Jim Justice's COVID-19 czar. Marsh has spent decades working in healthcare and is a central figure in the state's reopening plans. So he knows that for hospitals, COVID-19 has taken a toll. When the state was in quarantine mode, hospitals delayed and canceled many medical procedures. People shied away from elective surgeries that are just the kind of procedures that make money for hospitals. As a result, revenues are down, and some healthcare systems have laid off staff to keep costs down. Recently, Justice lifted those restrictions to allow elective medical procedures. Trey Kay, host of WVPB's program Us and Them, spoke with Dr. Clay Marsh about what comes next for the state's medical systems.
You earlier in this conversation used the term Walmart. You know, when Walmart comes in and the mom and pop store gets crowded out, what happens to the people who are in that rural area when Walmart decides, you know what, the business model's not so great for us to be here?
Well,
and they go away and mom and pop's not there anymore.
Yeah, I guess what you hope is that the Walmart type groups and at my day job at West Virginia University and WVU Medicine, we're part of Walmart. And so the hope is that we start to employ some of the people that may not have their place stay. And then we put, you know, assets or help use the assets that are being abandoned to try to provide local healthcare. The goal is never to go disrupt and take over and crowd out local healthcare assets. The truth is, though, as you said, this has been going on for a while, and this COVID thing has accelerated the decline. It's fractured the fragile. And so I think that what we see is those are probably not sustainable no matter what. But during this time, it's happening faster.
It's really kind of putting organizations that are already kind of weak through a stress test. COVID is the stress test. Where will rural regional hospitals and clinics in West Virginia be after COVID? Where do you think?
We have three big health systems and really four big health systems in the state. We have Mountain Health, which is Marshall University.
Right.
We have Charleston Area Medical Center. And then the three I was thinking of is really we have Mon Health and WVU Medicine in the north. It's kind of a shared thing. But I think that at some level, most smaller communities will probably have some connection to these three health systems. But it also could be that there may be consolidation at some point with some of those groups too, because of the reimbursement and the fact that insurance is reducing their payment. And there's so much money in healthcare. We're what now almost 20% of GDP, because we know that sick care, critical care, heart care, cancer care, neurologic care, what you see everybody investing in, including WVU, is the stuff that reimburses the best. It's the most complex care, and it's really designed to rescue people from failure. I think what you'll see over some time is the population health, which is really designed to help people be healthy and stay in their homes. Let's try to help people live a better life. Let's help people be healthier, and that will kill the business model that we have right now.
You know, I was speaking to a public health doctor not long ago, and one of the things he said to me was, after this COVID pandemic passes, I really hope that the healthcare system, the national healthcare system that we have in America, is not the same as what we had in January 2020 when we first started hearing about this pandemic. Do you think that's a possibility?
Oh, I think it's probably more than a possibility. I think our health system, and probably in many ways our university systems, our governmental systems, the NIH, I mean, you think about it, our industries, our businesses, our banks have really been generated top down, where we looked for business efficiencies. You know, part of the COVID pandemic is we got so reliant on other countries' supply chains that we wanted just in time, like from China, for all of our personal protective equipment. We got caught with our pants down because they basically failed and they used their own stuff. And we didn't have anything. We didn't make it anymore. We relied on other people to give it to us. So I think as we go forward, healthcare will change because of the stress. So to save money and improve outcome, let's help people be healthier. I think that's going to be the natural direction that things will go over time.
You've been listening to an excerpt of the latest episode of our podcast, Us and Them. You can download Us and Them wherever you get your podcasts or listen online at wvpublic.org. This episode of Us and Them is presented with support from the Claude Worthington Benedum Foundation and the West Virginia Humanities Council. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:49. Partly sunny skies today with a chance of rain and thunderstorms, highs in the 80s. Rain and thunderstorms possible tonight with lows in the 60s. And tomorrow, partly cloudy, chance of rain and thunderstorms, highs in the 80s. Support for WVPB is provided by Segra, providing next-generation communication solutions over an expanding fiber optics network. More information at segra.com. Casey Chambers is an attorney in Lexington, Kentucky. In January, she released her memoir, Hill Women, in which she examines life in Eastern Kentucky through the eyes of three generations of women in her family. Chambers spoke with Eric Douglas by Skype to discuss the book.
The book is set, or the story you, as you tell it, is Eastern Kentucky. Can you explain to me a little bit more specifically where we're talking about in Eastern Kentucky?
The book is set in Owsley County, which is one of the poorest counties in America. It's, you know, a place where the average household income is around, I think, $16,000 a year for a family of four. It has very high rates of disability. There are two restaurants in town, a sort of dairy bar and a diner. No franchise businesses other than, you know, some dollar stores and a couple gas stations. And so it's really just a very small, very rural town in the holler of the Eastern Kentucky Mountains.
You made a choice, I believe it was your junior year in high school or leading into your junior year in high school, to leave the mountains, to go away to school. And let's talk about that first. Why did you make that decision to get out of Kentucky?
My parents had always instilled in me how important education was. And although I had not seen a lot of the world and I had not traveled to a lot of places, I had been raised to know that that was something I wanted. Never been any doubt in my mind that I was going to go to college and that I would probably go to college away from my family. That's what my mom had done. That's what, you know, she had sort of assumed I would do as well. And so I got a brochure to this international high school. It was in New Mexico and it was free for everyone who got in. And then it had college scholarships. And so I decided to apply. And when I got in, it was such a good opportunity that I felt like I couldn't pass it up. And so I ended up going. And that sort of started me on this journey to seeing the larger world and experiencing the larger world outside of the mountains.
You talked about both at the high school and then at Yale, feeling uncomfortable with your own roots, your Appalachian roots, and trying to put them aside and trying to work to fit in for a while. What was that period like for you?
I think I was always aware of the negative idea of, you know, a hillbilly, all those stereotypes. And as a teenager, I think all of us want nothing more than to be accepted. And I thought that, you know, coming from the mountains, being a part of a family that, you know, I think the outside world probably still thinks of as hillbillies in a lot of ways, was something that was going to stop me from being able to fit into these new worlds that I was trying to explore. I thought people would judge me and that they would look down on me. And so I spent a lot of my early adulthood, my late teenage years and early adulthood, trying to figure out how to be who I thought belonged in these privileged environments. And I didn't think that I could both be myself, you know, the poor kid from East Kentucky, and fit into these very privileged environments that I was working really, really hard to be a part of.
Once you were finished with Harvard Law and I assume took a few days off to breathe, you decided to return to Eastern Kentucky.
Yeah. And it was one of those things that I realized I'd been working on problems in Boston, you know, poverty law issues. And there are good organizations doing that kind of work in Kentucky. There just aren't as many people trying to do it to address rural poverty. It's harder, you know, people are more diffuse. And so it's just, there are all kinds of unique logistical challenges. And I decided if I wanted to work on these issues, you know, I felt tied to Kentucky. I've always felt tied to Kentucky. And I decided it was time to go home and make a difference in communities like the one I grew up in.
To come back to the book for a second, it's a memoir. It's you talking about your experiences and through the lives of your family. A lot of times when writers write memoirs, they have those aha moments. They have, you know, personal epiphanies. Did you learn any lessons, or what lessons did you learn about yourself when you actually had to sit down and put it all together?
I think I became even more aware of how generational change and how my circumstances and my opportunities were such a long time in the making. I think there's this idea out there of this, you know, pull yourself up by the bootstraps narrative. And a lot of people, if they were telling a story like mine, it would start with, you know, me being born into poverty in a trailer and then working hard and going to the Ivy League. And that would be the story. And that would be the arc of it. And I think, you know, I intuitively knew this, but writing the book really drove home how it took three generations for me to even have the opportunity to, you know, even think about applying to those types of educational institutions. And now that I see that, now that I see how, you know, change takes generations and it takes a village, I've really been talking about Hill Women as this anti-bootstraps narrative, because I hope what it does is change the way that we talk about those types of stories, those sorts of rags to riches or poverty to, you know, elite institution type stories.
That was Hill Women author Casey Chambers. She is currently taking a break from being a lawyer so she can run for office in Louisville, Kentucky, while she's raising her newborn son. Hill Women is currently available through Ballantine Books. This interview is part of an occasional series with authors from the region. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Brittany Patterson produces our show. Our news director is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.